You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
A decade ago today, the United States launched its invasion of Iraq, and of course we all know how that story ends. What was supposed to be a quick and tidy conflict turned into a grueling multi-year guerrilla war, which has claimed thousands of lives, cost trillions of dollars, and left Iraq a fractured society more closely aligned with Iran than with the United States. Joining us now is New York Magazine columnist Frank Rich. He is the author of The Greatest Story Ever Sold, which was published in 2006. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. 10 years after the launch of the Iraq War, what do you think the most important lessons of the conflict were? And have all of our political leaders learned those lessons?
I guess the easy part is no to the second question. I think that there's so many lessons, it's hard to know where to start. First of all, the United States is not well served by going precipitously to war on vague causes, faulty evidence, if not deliberately misleading evidence, without a proper coalition and without a clear plan. I mean, it's hard to imagine how anything, it's hard to know what good lesson came out of the way we plunged into Iraq. But whether we've learned these lessons, who knows? I mean, some of these lessons actually we should have learned from the Vietnam War and didn't. So I'm not terribly optimistic about it. And I would also point out that in both the cases of Vietnam and the Iraq War, this was not just a Republican militarist adventure. Democrats signed on and were a big part of it as well, even if they didn't necessarily lead it, although in the case of Vietnam, they did. But the Johnson did. Then there's the whole press piece of it. The fact remains that it's one of the great blots on the history of American journalism that most of the press, not all of it, but most of it, and most of the most influential press, failed to vet properly or show real skepticism about the case for war made by a propagandistic-minded White House.
And Frank, and a little later in this hour, we'll be talking to Brooke Gladstone of WNYC's On the Media about the press's role in that conflict. The press reports this morning that there was a wave of bombings across Baghdad, which claimed at least 56 lives, wounded more than 200. Will these kinds of attacks just be part of the normal landscape of Iraq from now on?
I don't know. I assume so. I think the whole idea that we established a stable, lasting democratic government in Iraq, which became ultimately supposedly the reason we went there. There were other reasons to begin with. It seems to be a fiction. And furthermore, as I don't have to tell your listeners, the whole region remains destabilized, and even as we speak, the president is heading off to another corner of the Middle East for another unresolved deal, or at least appear in proximity to another long unresolved conflict with unpredictable ends. And so it's a Groundhog Day feeling to all of it. And what's interesting to me is, you know, you talk about the bombings in Iraq. We installed a government there, the Maliki government. I don't think most Americans know or care what's going on there. And I don't say this to fault the public. I think they felt they were bamboozled, and they were in the run-up to the war, and in signing on to this war, we're still paying the price domestically in many ways. And furthermore, the war was always fought by a very, very small group, percentage-wise, of Americans. And so it's sort of out of mind, out of sight, and I think we've tuned out. We tuned out long ago. You know, in the 2012 election, Afghanistan, still the site of a hot war, barely registered as a political issue, either in terms of candidates talking about it or in terms of public polling of issues that mattered to Americans. It's just incredible what's happened in 10 years from, you know, shock and awe to shrug and indifference, basically.
And there are people in Iraq who see Maliki as the Shiite version of Saddam Hussein and are worried that he is establishing a similar kind of dictatorship, although that may take him a little while to establish. No one has claimed responsibility for the bombings, but the AAP reports that they bore all the hallmarks of al-Qaeda in Iraq. Do you think our invasion of the country helped strengthen al-Qaeda and its many franchises?
It depends how loosely you defined, you know, al-Qaeda, because obviously there are various militant Islamic, often terrorist organizations that go by a variety of names. I think that the actual sort of Osama bin Laden, al-Qaeda, the group that attacked us on 9/11, has been weakened from all evidence. And of course, bin Laden is himself is gone. But yes, I don't think we've done anything to really stop the growth of Islamic militarism. And furthermore, we're in kind of a nebulous position in so many places in the Middle East. We don't really know what to do, what side to turn to, Syria being, of course, a classic example. And in the case of Iraq itself, of course, although the Bush administration tried to make the case that there was some connection between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda, there wasn't. But once we destabilized the country, invaded it, and sort of took the lock off of the dictatorship there, we had wish fulfillment. The cause for war happened ex post facto, I guess, after we went in there.
Well, should we be surprised that a Sunni group is fighting to regain control of Iraq, which is a Shia majority country, especially in the light of the fact that the Bush administration seemed to even not know much about Iraq. I've heard reports that in the weeks leading up to the war, a group of Iraqi dissidents had to explain to George W. Bush that there were two kinds of Muslims in Iraq that didn't like each other, and Saddam, a Sunni, was kind of oppressing the Shiite majority.
Right. Well, indeed, I think that was reported by George Packer, if memory serves, in the New York Times Magazine, that indeed this had to be explained to the President of the United States. And keep in mind, people like John McCain were saying at the a big supporter of the war and a hawk, were saying at the time, oh, this, you know, the Sunni Shiite problem will take care of itself. They can all just get along. I guess get along like the same way the Democrats and Republicans get along in America. The history of this region and the history of that religion and of the sects within it is immutable as far as Western interference goes. We're not going to change that equation. These are two different tribes. There's also, in the case of Iraq, the Kurds, who have a whole who are sort of in some ways victimized by both sides. And so we never gave any thought to this. We just went in and upset the apple cart, and we didn't also think of the implications in terms of strengthening what's supposed to be our number one enemy now of Iran.
My guest is Frank Rich, columnist for New York Magazine, author some years back of The Greatest Story Ever Sold. I assume that there's little that you would change in that book. Stephen Hadley, the former National Security Advisor to President Bush, spoke to NPR this weekend, and he had this to say about the lead-up to the war and the arguments being made about Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
Republicans thought he had them. Democrats thought he had them. The Clinton administration thought he had them. The Bush administration thought he had them. We were all wrong.
Did anyone express doubts? Colin Powell went along with the claims. Did the CIA?
Well, we now know. Yes, of course, there were doubts expressed in the bureaucracy of the intelligence community. There were cavils to the reports that Congress got and didn't read. There was also, despite the widespread journalistic failure, there were some reporters, particularly what was then called the Knight Ridder chain, Knight Ridder Washington Bureau, who picked up on some of these dissident intelligence sources before we went to war. As we know, all of this was ignored by people in power, including Stephen Hadley. There was a strong and successful attempt by the Bush White House, particularly Dick Cheney, to suppress information that contradicted the case for war. And we now know it was an actual concerted propaganda campaign. There was never any evidence, for instance, of nuclear weapons in the case of Iraq. There was some sort of evidence about chemical and biological weapons, but the Bush White House made the concerted decision to press the idea of nuclear apocalypse. And as we know, a White House speechwriter wrote a phrase that was constantly trundled out by top people in the Bush administration: we don't want the smoking gun to become a mushroom cloud, implying that Saddam was imminently could bomb the United States. And, of course, it was very cleverly done to exploit the post-9/11 fears of another actual terrorist attack on American soil.
And even years after we found out there are no weapons of mass destruction, former Ambassador Joseph Wilson was punished for writing in the New York Times that the administration's claims that Saddam was buying yellow cake from Niger or Niger were false. So
also, there were also fake reports pushed by Cheney of a meeting involving Iraq and one of the 9/11 terrorists, Mohammed Atta, to form an alliance. Keep in mind, this campaign was so sophisticated that at the time we actually went to war in Iraq in 2003, 10 years ago, a large number of Americans believed that the 9/11 hijackers were Iraqis, when in fact, of course, none of them were. That's how brilliantly it was done. And you know, I have to say, 10 years later has not blunted anger is the only word I can think of to use about it, because we really were. Country was sold a bill of goods, and a lot of it was fiction. And Powell himself, of course, Colin Powell, has said that he was misled by his own administration, and the evidence that he gave to make the case for some sort of Saddam WMD apparatus before the United Nations Security Council. And he sort of, even at the time, knew he was being misled. He didn't know the full extent of it and regards it as the darkest day in his career, as well as he should. He's not an unsophisticated guy, but he was duped by this stuff.
Hans Blix of the UN and Scott Ritter were guests on the show at the time, and they expressed serious doubts that Saddam still had an arms program. Hans Blix told me, the CIA says this is probably where they're stored. We make a surprise raid. There's nothing there. And yet, the CIA still continues to claim that he has weapons of mass destruction.
Well, yeah, Blix was, it was, even at the time, seemed to be a heroic figure for trying to get the truth out. But, of course, what happened was there was a big attempt, and a successful one, by the Stephen Hadleys of this world, if not specifically him, to discredit him and to try to portray anyone who was contradicting the White House's case as some sort of left-wing flake or pacifist, or you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. They were with the terrorists, and you know, you look back, it's just so galling. I mean, in the Labor Day weekend of 2002, which is of course what would turn out to be almost on the eve of war, that was the day that the Times ran its front page. It was a Sunday paper story by Michael Gordon and Judy Miller about Saddam Hussein's intensified quest for atom bomb parts, where there were some aluminum tubes that supposedly he was getting his hands on to make bombs with. That morning, on all the morning talk shows, on Meet the Press and Face the Nation, and This Week, Cheney and others, they all went out and pushed this case in conjunction with a story they had essentially planted in the Times in exactly that language about the aluminum tubes were a smoking gun that would lead to a mushroom cloud.
Well, she paid a price, but do you think that there's been an adequate public reckoning for the politicians and other media figures who advocated loudly for the war?
No.
Many of them still have positions of power.
I still have positions in power, and I still feel that even Democrats who signed onto this, including Hillary Clinton, and she did pay a price because I think it hurt her run for the presidency in 2008, have still not really given to me what sounds like a full, circumspect, honest accounting of what went on and why they signed onto this. They are not nearly as responsible as the Bush White House that falsified evidence, manipulated evidence, and manipulated people like Hillary Clinton. But why people as smart as she and other Democrats of that time, Tom Daschle, you know, there are many, signed onto this. I'm waiting for that accounting too. And look, Cheney has just made just appearing in a documentary that Showtime showed last weekend that he was right, everyone else is wrong, the case is true, and what's anyone's problem?
And he would do the whole invasion all over again in a heartbeat. Thank you so much for talking with us.
What heartbeat do we wish? Well, he's talking about. I'm joking. I'm sorry.
Well, he has had all sorts of heart operations, so I don't know what that means exactly. Yeah. Frank Rich is a columnist for New York Magazine, and we've been talking about the invasion of Iraq 10 years after. We will continue looking into this for the next 3 days and in the next 20 minutes.